This is Sheila Hummel and Andrew Ridgwick with New Day Dawning. Welcome to the programme and thank you for joining us on Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio.
I'm getting ready for a new day dawning. I'm getting ready for a brand new morning. Packing my bags for a heavenly journey. I can't wait to be there. No, I can't wait to be there.
Some of the most passionate love poetry can be found in the Bible, believe it or not. It's called Song of Songs. It's attributed to King Solomon, and it's said that it's all about God's love for his people. This opening song you're about to hear reminds me so much of it. You probably won't recognise this language, but when translated, it tells us it's about a young man trying to persuade his young lover to come down to the grove, if only for a minute. He tries to assure her that her feet will not get wet against the dew, because he will carry her. She won't get cold, as he will draw her close and warm her with his heart, which is all aflame like the embers of a fire. Could this song be about God's love for us too?
Kita visoki usičeni, liste bestvijo tremti. Nebo, ljuboki, zdaj si je nazorani, šoto za Božja krasa, perla mi jasni popito boljami, rajek perlista rosa.
Song there has been described as the most beautiful Ukrainian love song, called Moonlight Night. An appropriate choice, for today we have a special guest with us who'll be telling us all about the groundbreaking work she's been doing for families fleeing the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And you'll hear of her burning heart for its people. Her name is Nicola Denyer, a lay reader, who has not all that long ago taken on a quite different and more challenging role in the Diocese of Newcastle. Good morning, Nicola.
Good morning.
It's so good to have you with us on New Day Dawning this morning. Could you begin by telling our listeners first about your journey of faith so far and your call to ministry and your important new role as, what is it?
Lay Ministry Development Officer.
It's quite a mouthful, isn't it?
Lay Ministry Development Officer.
Okay, off you go.
So thank you. It's lovely to talk to you today. So I wasn't a Christian from birth. I mean, I was baptised, so I was in a way, but didn't start going to church until about 2010, when I was in my 30s. I had two small boys. And I had been a nurse, but had a back injury, so I'd had to leave work because of that. So life was very different to how I expected it to be. I was in a wheelchair and all sorts of things. And then one day my youngest, Aidan, came back from Beavers at St Mary's Church Hall in Monk Seaton and said that they were having a pancake party and that he really wanted to go. And it wasn't really that easy because I couldn't drive. I had to organise a lift to get there, but he kept saying that he wanted to go, so we went. And I remember saying to my husband that I would be about half an hour. And I was there for an hour and a half, welcomed by all of the people from the church. And we all had a brilliant time. So I remember going home and saying to my husband, I think I might go to church on Sunday. And he said, what for? And I said, I don't know, really. I'm just going to go. And honestly, that was the start of my journey to faith. So we had a wonderful vicar at the time called Robin Greenwood, who was very good at discerning, I think, callings in people. And shortly after going, I started a year-long course called Living Theology Northeast, which was just about learning a little bit more about the history of the church and things like that. And it was during that course that my calling into reader ministry was discerned. So yeah, within 5 years of setting foot in a church, I was a fully qualified reader.
Amazing.
I know, it was quite quick. And it's been wonderful, really. I mean, reader ministry is, so for those who don't really know what reader ministry is, it is a lay licensed minister. So I trained part-time alongside ordinands, alongside people who are now vicars and priests, but you remain lay, so you don't wear a collar, you can't marry anybody, you can't baptize anybody, but what you can do is teach, and you can say the sermons in church, and it's more kind of about being a bridge from church to the outside world and back, because you kind of straddle church and the secular world, which suits me.
Ministry on the margins.
It is. And with people who may be discerning a faith but have never set foot in church. So it's going out to where people are and being who I am.
It's quite brave for a young man to go into church in the first place like that.
Yeah.
And do you have the support of your husband afterwards? Do they become Christians or do they just watch what you're doing?
Yeah. It was brave. I remember that I didn't tell any of my friends for the first 6 months that I was going to church because none of them did. And so, yeah, I was quite embarrassed, which looking back now in all that I do seems silly. But it's quite countercultural, actually, I think, where we are right now to go to church if you haven't had that kind of upbringing. Mm-hmm. And we were doing a community event and I had a St. Mary's t-shirt on, and I hadn't realised that loads of the mums from school would be there, and they were all like, what are you doing? So I kind of was outed myself. But people, it's been amazing because I get prayer requests on Messenger. You know, people will say, my mum's ill, can you light a candle for her in church? And so, you know,
you do funerals as well then?
Yes, I do funerals as a lay reader, yeah.
Might that road even take you to priesthood one day, or have you said no to that?
Well, I've said I'd rather not at the minute, God, thank you very much. But I'm very aware that it's not my choice to make.
Okay.
You know, that if that's where God needs me to be at some point, you know, that will happen.
Is your husband a Christian?
He's not. Well, my husband doesn't come to church with me, but he is probably, in the way he lives his life, one of the most Christian people that I know. For him, church is more about how you treat people, being outside, and living your life in a way that does no harm and does good. Organised church isn't so much for him, but he's fully supportive of everything that I do. He's great.
So what part did you play in setting up the Facebook site, Safe Homes for Ukraine at the Coast? Did you work as part of a team of people to get the site going? Or was it completely just you and others added to your number?
Yeah, well, what happened was, I think it was the third day of the war in Ukraine, and there was a mum being interviewed on the BBC News at 6 from a subway basement. And she had with her a 3-year-old little girl. And my littlest one is only 4. And this little girl had blonde curly hair like my daughter has. And I thought, you know, if the war happened here, mm-hmm. My husband and my 2 older boys, who are 19 and 17, would be staying to fight. And it would be me and Iris, my little girl, who were looking for somewhere safe to go. So immediately I thought, you know, we've got a spare room, we need to offer it. And spoke to my husband, And he said, yeah, of course. And the boys actually came to us individually and said, we need to offer the room to people. And so immediately I thought, well, if I want to do this, there will be other people at the coast who want to do this as well. And we're going to need each other's support. So I kind of somehow met up with this other young mum from Whitley Bay, and we had a coffee and we thought, we need to do something community focused on this, because it's going to be too hard to do it as individuals. So yeah, so the next day, I think it was the 18th of March, I set up the Facebook group. Initially it was just me and Sarah, but then very quickly another couple of ladies came forward as admins on the group as well. But yeah, I just set it up and thought, you know, well, if a few of my friends and a couple of other people get involved, that would be great. But I think we've got about 950 members now, so it's kind of grown a bit.
Did you see this as part of your calling as lay ministry development officer, or was this, obviously it sounds as though it's from been from the heart as an individual rather than ministry?
Yeah, but I think that part of Redeem Ministry is being who you are in everything you do. So you know, I think that's really important. So I think that it wasn't so much as part of my role as lay ministry development officer, but as part of my faith as a Christian. You've just got to look and think, what would you want to happen to you? And if you would want people to welcome you, then you welcome. And it is that kind of radical welcome and hospitality, I think, that Jesus shows us. In, you know, that welcoming of a stranger. And so it is part of my calling, but it's just part of who I am, I think, that we have to do that welcome.
It sounds as though you're surrounded by a whole support system, not only your husband, your boys, your family, obviously perhaps grandparents, but also you've got support of each other, which is tremendous on the site, isn't it? Much needed.
Yeah, absolutely. It is.
When people sign up and offer their homes then to host Ukrainian refugees, they seem to have such a huge wall of bureaucracy to clamber over. Is all that necessary? And it makes it such a difficult process for everybody. I'm sure more people would help if it was easier access. Do you agree with that?
I do. I think it is getting easier now from when we did it. So we were really early to do it. I think it was about the 25th of March.
Pioneers then.
Pioneers, yeah, probably. So yeah, we were quite early to do it. And I matched up, because we've got two girls living up with us.
They're what are their names?
Daria and Kate. And they're both 22 and they both lived in Odessa. And Daria is an English teacher and Kate is a maths teacher. So we matched with them over a Facebook site, because when the government brought out the scheme, it was only if you knew somebody in Ukraine. So very quickly all these Facebook sites and other social media sites sprang up with people from Ukraine asking for sponsors in the UK. Some of them were better than others. Some of them, safeguarding was central to what they were doing, which was obviously really important, especially as, you know, the girls are 22, travelling on their own, had never left Ukraine before. So I paired through a group called Sunflower Sisters, which was really about working with women, for women sponsors. Obviously, there could be men in the house, but the initial contact was with women. We had a video call. I showed them around our house on video, showed them my husband and my little girl, and they said, yes, we'd like to come. So the next day, we sat down over Zoom and filled all the visa forms in, which seems really quick, but I think there was very much a match in...
There's biometrics and all kinds of visa problems. And
well, the visa took nearly a month, no, 6 weeks, I think it took to come through. And that was really hard, because the girls were worrying about it and I was trying to reassure them but was worried about it. But anyway, it came and I picked Daria up in Manchester. She flew to Manchester, and then Kate, because Kate's wider family are in Whitley Bay as well, they travelled by train through to Poland. So Kate's wider family are staying with two other host families in Whitley Bay.
That is wonderful.
It is, because we've got to know the other two families as well, so it's like we've become this extended kind of family.
Did Do local schools know about the skills of such people?
Yeah.
Because there must be Ukrainian children longing for some kind of Ukrainian input from a real teacher like you.
Absolutely, kids. Absolutely. And until recently, the girls have both been working, so they continued to teach remotely. So even though they were here, they were teaching the children that were in their classes in Odessa, even though those children might be in Poland, might be in England.
That is amazing, isn't it?
Yes. So they've just started their summer holidays in Ukraine. So the girls are both looking at what they can do here. And certainly Daria, because she speaks amazing English, as well as Ukrainian and Russian, would be, you know, brilliant for any kind of schools. And Kate is a really talented photographer. So I've helped her set up her own page on Facebook to see if she can get some work that way as well.
I've seen some of the photographs. They're beautiful.
She's great.
Perhaps you'll share something about your own guests, Nicola, who share your home now.
Yes.
And your bathroom.
Yeah.
The joys as well as the challenges and the difficulties, their concerns. Mm-hmm. And mainly, how has this affected your daily routine, mm-hmm, when it was just you, your husband and your children?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the girls have fitted in amazingly well. So they're both 22 from Odessa. Kate and Daria, both teachers. And the first 3 weeks, I would say, we were all kind of walking on eggshells a little bit, you know, trying to make sure that everybody was okay. Like you would be if sometimes family come and stay, you know, it's always strange, isn't it, having, mm-hmm, somebody else in your home. And then after that, we've just kind of fallen into a routine where it feels like the girls have been there forever. Our four-year-old absolutely adores them.
Oh.
She loves having two older girls in the house. She thinks girls are the best. So, you know, she'll shove our brothers and our dad out and she'll be like, you can't come in here, just girls.
Three mothers now.
Yeah, and it is like, you know, three mothers or two big sisters for her. And they equally adore her, so they're teaching her Ukrainian. Because she's four, she picks it up really easily. So generally, after the first sort of settling in period, it's been wonderful. We have been very honest with them. And what I realised quite quickly is these are two young women who've been to university, who lived in a city. They lived in Odessa. They weren't living at home with their parents. So they're more than capable of finding their way around Whitley Bay. You know, they don't need to be mothered. Although sometimes I do tend to overstep the mark. So Daria was ill the other week and I had to cook food for her. But I think she was really grateful about that. But they don't want to eat with us, you know, they don't want to cook with us.
They cook their own food?
Or they'll go and get a pizza.
Right.
Because they're 22, you know, yes, they're students. So they're more than, they're always, you know, we're always happy for them to eat with us. But, you know, they don't want to. If I think back to when I was 22, I wouldn't have wanted to eat with parents all the time. Or, you know, people parents' age, which is what we are. The only difficulties, I think, are emotionally, because Daria's parents are in Ukraine still. Kate's dad is in the army in Ukraine. So emotionally supporting them through that is probably the hardest bit. So I think they've been here for about 3.5 weeks and Odessa was bombed, and it was really close to where they'd lived, and that was really difficult, and Kate didn't know if her house had been damaged. And I think that's the most difficult bit, is how we support them
and carry them in their troubles.
Yeah, because I think perhaps they thought that because they were over here it wouldn't be so hard.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously it's just as hard.
Could I just ask, if you are hearing someone on the Facebook saying, this is me, I need help,
mm-hmm,
how do you know that that is authentic? And also the people who say, I will help you,
yeah,
how do you know they're authentic?
Yeah.
Just from a Facebook post?
It's really, really hard. What we tend to do is, if somebody comes onto our site or asks to join our site from Ukraine, then we'll do a little bit of research. So we'll look at their Facebook page, see if there's a history of it, because you do get, you know, spammers or bots, as they're called. But very quickly, what you'll see, if you try to go onto their own Facebook page, there'll be like one picture and it'll be locked, or they've only joined Facebook a couple of weeks ago, so you just wouldn't go near that, really.
People, and what about the other way then?
The other way again, so I would follow the same process. So if somebody asked to join our page and said that they were English and they wanted to host somebody, then we would again check.
Do the same research on them.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's reassuring.
Absolutely. And you've just got to be careful. And then if somebody posts something that you don't like, then we have a very, certainly on our group, we have a very kind of quick to block people.
That's excellent. Can I ask you another difficult question? Mm. Some relationships with some families have broken down because of some trauma. Can you say a little bit about that? And also what happens to the family if things fall apart?
Yeah. So we haven't had it happen with any of the people on our Whitley Bay kind of at the course page. But it is happening more and more often. And often when it's happening, it's because either there's been mixed expectations between the host and the guest as to what could be offered. Sadly, on a number of occasions, it has been because of some kind of grooming behaviour or abusive, coercive kind of behaviour on the part of the sponsor to the guest. And local councils have responded to this, certainly in North Tyneside, really, really well. North Tyneside Council, from start to now, has been incredible compared to other councils around the country. So it does happen.
You have their interests very much at heart, don't you?
Yeah, you have to.
Yes. But in some cases, that trauma has been sleepwalking, though.
Absolutely.
Nightmares, and it's difficult for some people to...
Smoking
when they didn't realise they're smokers.
Yeah, I think that...
These are surmountable, are they?
They are surmountable, and certainly in our group, because we have meetings all the time, for hosts and guests. We've got a hosts WhatsApp group, there's a guests only social media group, so we get together regularly and we can talk these things out. Mm-hmm. I think knowing that you're supported makes a massive difference.
What I found encouraging from our chat before is that when one person's accommodation was checked out by an official service and found to be most unsuitable, the girl was met at the airport by officials and she was redirected to a much safer place. The system actually is fraught with dangers, and we have to realise that, and checks have to be made. Your Safe Homes for Ukraine the Coast Facebook site has expanded and developed beautifully, hasn't it, with a team of people who help each other as hosts, and such a lot of help has been offered by those who are perhaps not in a position to host themselves. I've read about provision of free educational courses, English lessons, clothing contributions, crisis management, sport and therapeutic leisure activities, friendship and support groups, provision of toys, bikes, furniture. It's wonderful what's developed since it was first set up. How might anyone listening in today to this programme get involved themselves? And what if they wanted to contribute in some way by money or set up another group themselves?
Yeah, there's honestly, the way that people have come forward for this is incredible. And right from the very beginning, we've wanted to make sure that those people who wanted to support the scheme but couldn't host were able to do that. So yes, what we've started to do very recently on top of what you said is that we now have the ability to get funds in a audited charity response that's held by Janine, one of the other admins, who has a local charity, so we can ring fence money for Ukraine. And that, at the minute, is going towards teas and coffees for guests who are having English lessons in cafes.
Yes.
But there's so many other ways. Local businesses have been incredible, offering places for people to meet, who won't take any money. It's amazing. There is so much that people can do to help. And honestly, I would say, you know, I'm very happy for people to get in touch with me, particularly if they're
through
looking
the Facebook
site. Through the Facebook site, if they're looking to set something up as well, I can help.
That is so helpful. I'd like to finish this programme with a blessing for your hosts and guests and all those listening in today. It's a song which became popular in March 2020, released a few days before the pandemic, and written by Chris Brown, Cody Carnes, Corey Job and Steve Fatink. These lyrics are largely taken from the priestly blessing found in the Book of Numbers, and they say, "The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace." Thank you so much for sharing your work with us today, Nicola.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
You've been listening this morning to Nicola Denier from Safe Homes for Ukraine at the Coast. That's all we have time for now. It's goodbye from me, Sheila Hamill, and Andrew Ridgewick, my technical assistant. Please join us next week for New Day Dawning at 8 o'clock. Bye for now.
Lord bless you and keep you. Make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. The Lord bless you and keep you. Make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. We agree. Amen.